Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're going to talk about a very, very important aspect of health, and that is the eyes. And I think that there probably is nowhere in medicine where a nutritional perspective has gained more traction in the last 20 years or so than in the realm of eye care. In the past, if you asked an eye doctor, perhaps in 1985, 1990 or so, if there was any kind of supplement that you could take, I guess that was the Bugs Bunny era of eye care. They would tell you, eat carrots because that might help your vision. But as far as targeted approach to various eye diseases, there wasn't much. That is until the individual I'm about to interview came along. He's Dr. Robert Abel Jr., and he wrote a book way back in 1999, which ushered in the eye care revolution. Now he's back with yet another updated edition of the eye care revolution. He has a lot of new things to add to his encyclopedic discussion of how to deal with eye care from an integrative standpoint, because he doesn't eschew conventional methods, but he's also big on the importance of lifestyle and nutrition and targeted supplements, herbs, even homeopathic and Asian remedies in treating various eye problems. And he brings a unique perspective because he's conventionally trained, as well as being very open in investigating all the modalities that are going to help his patients achieve better vision. So without further ado, by the way, Dr. Abel earned his medical degree at Jefferson Medical College. He has all the important credentials that a top-flight ophthalmologist should have, and he practices in Delaware. Dr. Abel and I know each other for a real long time. In fact, as I open this edition of the Eye Care Revolution, there's all kinds of luminaries who weighed in with wonderful testimonials and recommendations for his book, and I see among them, in fact, top of the list, when it comes to breakthrough therapy for eye problems, Dr. Abel is the source for reliable, up-to-date information. Signed, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, MD, host of WR's Health Talk and author of Intelligent Medicine. So that was, about 15 years ago. And my recommendation still stands for this great book. So without further ado, here's Dr. Abel. It's a pleasure having you back in the program, because I know we've interviewed in the past when the show was in its previous incarnation as Health Talk.
Well, Dr. Hoffman, it's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners, and there is so much to say when you consider that 80% of our connection to the world is through our eyes, and 40% of the brain is dedicated to visual function, even though we don't always recognize it. And you have about 100 times as many fibers go to the brain from the optic nerve as from the auditory nerve. And that my feeling is that memories are different layers or a tegmentum of visual experiences, because when you think of things and people, you get a visual image that have been, you know, incorporated deep in the hippocampus. In fact, vision is so interesting that blind people can now see through their tongue with new technology. And I've been on the radio with such a person who was an ex-Marine, and lost both eyes and is able to see black, white, and gray because the information no longer passes through the optic nerve back to the occipital lobe, but goes directly from the tongue to the hippocampus.
Wow.
And so there's so much going with both scientific as well as preventive mechanisms for eye care.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why you're constantly updating the book, The Eye Care Revolution, because it's not a static science. The revolution is happening before our very eyes, excuse the pun. The innovations are coming fast and furious, and they're both high-tech innovations as well as new discoveries about how nutrition and lifestyle bear on our eyes. And is it not correct to say that the eyes are very delicate organs, and as such, they might be very, very susceptible to environmental influences? That's pretty much correct, right?
That's pretty much correct. In fact, for instance, the lens of the eye doesn't mature until people are 18 or 20. So all those days on the beach, the UV and the low blue wavelengths are going through the lens and burning the retina. So that sunglasses are one of the four ways of blocking the major stressors for the eye, which is UV and blue light, dietary indiscretions, lifestyle issues, and stress in general.
Mm-hmm. And it, of course, it's true that, as the song goes, smoke does get in your eyes. It's one of the worst things you can do for your eyes, right?
Correct.
And I think that probably dates both of us if we know what that song was about.
Well, I think some of the listeners may know about it as well.
Some of our listeners.
We're also experiencing an epidemic of myopia, which
right.
is nearsightedness. A recent study came out and said 21% of students in Germany that got through ninth grade only were nearsighted, but those that got through the full 12 grades, 61% were myopic.
Mm-hmm.
93% of Taiwan, 50% of Swedish recruits, and now American youth is about 42% of some level of myopia because of all the near activity, the tweeting, the texting, the computers, the phones, etc., and the people need to take a break to block that aspect of progressive nearsightedness.
Well, you know, wearing glasses is a sign of intelligence. In fact, sometimes people actually affect eyeglasses to gain a couple of IQ points. I think it was Governor Perry who used to not wear glasses, had a reputation for maybe not being the sharpest knife in the drawer, and now he wears glasses and he seems to have picked up a few IQ points. So is it possible that, I know you wear glasses, correct?
For reading.
For reading. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, I thought you were a smart guy, but you're disappointing me. But when I was a kid, I was one of the first, I think I was the first kid in my class to have both glasses and braces. So this is a terrible distinction. They called me Four Eyes, and I was a bookish young man. And, I guess there really is something to it that, spend too much time in near vision tasks. You're gonna ruin your vision, or you at least you're gonna mess up the whatever the eye muscles that control near vision.
Well, look where you are now. You can sink your teeth into any subject. Something called Vision to Learn has exploded on the scene here in Delaware. We're the second site, first being L.A. All children from K through fifth grade who are unable to afford eyeglasses and eye exams are getting free eye exams and eyeglasses through this Vision to Learn program. And it is so interesting because people who are smart wearing glasses, well, some of these people couldn't see, and they certainly smarted up. And the fact is, if you're even looking at the issue of economic deprivation, you're going to give kids a chance to catch up with their peers where otherwise they'd be ignored or called stupid because they couldn't see the blackboard.
Mm-hmm. So what is it about the near vision and now especially with all these electronic devices that affects the development of the eyes and causes people to become nearsighted?
It is the convergence. It is the chronic convergence where the eyes turn in because all other eye muscles are conjugated to working parallel. Most activities, distance, side view, etc., are parallel except for reading. And these muscles hypertrophy externally, and it has some relationship internally to the internal muscles that go into a tightening up and therefore changing the unaided refraction.
But it actually, from my imperfect understanding of this, it actually has something to do with the shape of your eyeball, that some people have short eyeballs and some people have elongated eyeballs. I guess elongated eyeballs mean that you're nearsighted, correct?
Well, we either have long eyes or highly curved corneas to be nearsighted.
Okay.
However, this third ingredient, this sort of occupational, developmental ingredient, does not necessarily have to have either.
Okay.
What happens is we see the lawyer come in at 40 years old, all of a sudden needing less myopic correction.
Mm-hmm.
We see other people in their 50s. All of a sudden, they've gone from a minus 4 to a minus 3 because this element gets partially abridged in as we age.
So let's turn to what I think is the most dramatic and successful paradigm for intervention into a serious eye disease, which is the revolution in nutritional care for macular degeneration, which you really were a pioneer in understanding. Tell us about how it started and how far along are we to nutritionally coping with this, I guess, the leading cause of blindness in people over 65.
I was giving a lecture to ophthalmologists today, and one of them said, well, there's nothing you can do about macular degeneration.
Wow.
And that's kind of an old paradigm.
Here in 2014, that awareness hasn't even sunken in.
Well, that's because most Western doctors reflexly prescribe, and they manage a symptom without looking for the root cause. And the root cause is the eye is a bag of water. It's got two lenses, a cornea and a crystalline lens, and the rest is just clear solution for light is focused through those two lenses onto the retina. So the retina is constantly impinged with light and hopefully not too much UV light. All of the nutrition for the eye is in the liver. So you have to get a good diet, a good liver supply for especially your fat soluble, but even the methylating the B vitamins, to have nutrition to the eye. And usually it seems to come at night when people are in the dark, i.e. sleeping. So thinking in the broad sense, even sleep deficiencies may have a long-term consequence on the eye. Just as antacids, Prilosec, Nexium, etc., cause a B12 deficiency and neuropathy down the road, they also eliminate the complete digestion of your food, which ultimately may catch up with your central retina, the macula,
mm-hmm.
and the cells degrade.
What about the mania for the low-fat diet causing people to order egg whites? You know, I go to places, resorts sometimes, and people, you know, adjacent tables say, bring me an egg white omelet, you know. And so what are they missing when they eschew the cholesterol-laden yolk?
Well, you know, you probably have spoken about it many times before about the cholesterol myth and how we're driving down a single item, which is a building block of so many cells and of our hormones, and that obviously fat is so essential to us that the grandmother, Mother Goose, who tells the stories is usually a little chubby. Because back in the day when you needed to fight infection or starvation, you needed a supply of good nutrition. And fat gives you twice the energy of sugar or protein.
So clearly those people may be missing out. Also, now we're coming to realize that the yellow of the yolk is a signature for a couple of pretty essential compounds that are beneficial for the retina.
No question. In fact, the yellow is colored yellow because they feed the chickens lutein. And lutein, which is from marigold flowers commercially, reflects UV and blue light. That's why bees, which can see ultraviolet, will go to yellow flowers first before going to others. So the yolk is colored yellow because not only does it differentiate it from other unfertilized yolks, but it provides that important lutein nutrient to increase the pigment in the macula area for support.
So if you were to design the ideal supplement program for someone at risk for macular degeneration, and it turns out that we're all at risk, but for some reason, particularly, I believe it's Caucasian females seem to be at higher risk for one reason or another, perhaps because they have lighter eyes, greenish or blue eyes more so than other ethnicities. What would you recommend as a preventive nutritional program for the dread problem of macular degeneration?
Well, the first thing I would do is recommend they wear sunglasses during peak polar hours and replace their fluorescent lighting at their place of work, which also emits blue light.
Really? I didn't even realize that. There's potentially hazardous electromagnetic rays coming out of those devices and ordinary lights.
Correct. One of our employees has cutaneous lupus. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we replaced all the fluorescent lights, her skin lupus went away.
Wow.
I mean, that's quite the testimonial.
That's really a pearl. I never realized that.
First of all, you need omega-3 fatty acid, DHA primarily, since both cell membrane layers in the retina and the brain are heavily laden with DHA. All your mitochondria has DHA. So 50% of your retina is omega-3 DHA. And fat-soluble vitamins need to be taken with fat, you know, during a meal. Another reason to eat the yolk. Omega-3 D, vitamin D. There are four studies out that have showed that an adequate vitamin D level will support macular function and reduce the risk as much as 50%.
Wow.
D and DHA are also important for cognitive function. So ultimately, what's good for the eye is good for the brain, since the retina is an extension of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
You need a dabble of A and E, magnesium, zinc, lutein and its cousin zeaxanthin, pigment around the macula. The B vitamins are cofactors for neurological functions. B12 is important for the optic nerve and important for glaucoma. So there are many items. There are many small ones like taurine and coenzymes such as... I'm blocking our friend for vitamin E, has the coenzyme.
Oh, not tocotrienols you're not thinking of, or...
Yeah. Anyway, the other two valence compounds. One of the most popular or vitamin that's out there and is marketed commercially, especially used and recommended by doctors, ophthalmologists, was in the ARID study, the age-related eye disease study.
Mm-hmm. And could you just describe what that is? Because I think for a lot of listeners may not realize that major research has been underway that's really documented the benefits of these nutrients for eyes, and it's not just a theory. It's been well proven. So discuss briefly, touch upon ARIDS as you do in the book.
The National Institute of Health funded an examination by 11 eminent universities to determine that vitamins were not going to be helpful. So there were four groups: the placebo group, the zinc group, the multivitamin A, C, E group, and which A was beta-carotene, and the combination of zinc and A, C, and E. And the three nutritional groups all did better than placebo for moderate and advanced macular degeneration, such that the 10-year study was cut short at 7 years. I was the ophthalmology consultant on the study.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
With Bausch and Lomb. And when it was over, we knew it was going to work. When it was over, marketing took it over and said, doctors are foolish. They'll only believe a study. This should be what we market. And ophthalmology said, you got a 1990 formula with triple the level of zinc and copper, which is now found to increase the risk of Alzheimer's. So that was one of the reasons, Dr. Hoffman, that I started my own vitamin company. And the vitamin will come out November 3rd. As eye complex CS, but the concept is put in the best vitamins, reduce the risk of high levels that are going to competitively inhibit other vitamins, such that high levels of zinc are going to compete with all other
right.
2-plus valence vitamins.
So this is the work of Dr. David Newsom, I think, at University of Louisiana way back when, I think in the 80s, where he found that some astronomical dose, I think it was like 200 or 220 milligrams, something.
100 milligrams, 1988, in 2.5 years, found that there were decreased drusen, the precursor
right.
to macular degeneration.
But perhaps that was too high for ordinary use, or, some people take an eye care formula and a multivitamin, and pretty soon they have, three or four different sources, and an antioxidant, pretty soon they have too many sources of zinc, and that may add up to more than you need.
Correct.
So,
and that's why it's important to read the label.
Right. So clearly all those nutrients are implicated in protection from that form. That's the dry form of macular degeneration, so-called dry macular degeneration, where the macula gets pale and, sort of washed out looking. But then I often get calls on my radio program, and I wish you were there by my side to help me field those calls, where people say, well, okay, I have the wet form of macular degeneration, which is less common. And can you describe the difference? And is there a nutritional approach for wet macular degeneration?
Well, the wet comes from the dry. dry is the precursor.
Oh, I, okay.
There is an evolution in this pathogenesis.
I see.
That you start getting a dropout in the pigment epithelium. You start getting the pigment epithelium goes into little puddles of fat called hyaluronic fat called drusen. You then start losing receptors, and you get little wiggles in your vision if it progresses. And because of the lack of oxygen, there's a stimulus for new blood vessels to form. Just as in any injury, that after cells slide, if they're able to slide, blood vessels will come in and form a scar to heal it and protect the outer covering.
That's a so-called neovascularization, I think is the fancy word.
Neovascularization.
Right, okay.
Right, or subretinal net. And what happens is these vessels are extremely fragile, and besides forming little buds, they bleed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the anti-vascular endothelial growth factor injections that are now available to inject in the eye.
It's actually a cancer drug, originally a cancer drug designed to starve the blood supply to cancer, but now they've found that it's helpful for this type of macular degeneration.
Exactly right. And interestingly enough, the company that makes that cancer drug made another drug called Lucentis that they took through the FDA. So you can buy the cancer drug, which is almost identical, and treat 12 people with a $60 bottle.
Heck of a lot cheaper, yeah.
Going to Lucentis for $1,600 to treat one person.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to realize is how the pharmaceutical industry sometimes manipulates the market, because it's the same substance. They just got approval to market it as an eye drug. But if you want to prudently use the medication, you can use the cancer drug at the right dosage and save a heck of a lot of money, because this is one expensive drug, right?
That's correct.
So that's in the interest of the patient.
But macular degeneration is obviously increasing because of A, lack of sunglasses, less ozone layer, demographic shift towards the elderly. And the fact is that if people are told that they have early drusen, they may be actually getting a blessing, because all of a sudden they're going to transform their behavior, their eating habits, their vision habits, and perhaps stave this off. And there's no reason we can't continue to investigate nutritional avenues to support the retina. And it may begin in what you eat and whether you're taking an acid. It may begin with people looking at their thyroid function, looking at their bowel function, things that seem quite remote.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are many clues to other things in general health that are indicative of eye health as well.
So the eye problem that you get might end up saving your life or extending your life.
Correct.
Anyway, right?
Correct.
It could really be, certainly gets your attention, and you'll want to undertake corrective action. Now, you mentioned sleep as being a factor in there. You mentioned in your book, and I think this is new because I don't think you touched upon it in your earlier edition of the book, that sleep apnea is actually a big problem related to eye diseases. Can you explain that?
Well, first of all, you're probably aware, Dr. Hoffman, about sleep apnea and hypertension, stroke, cardiovascular events, etc., because the marked shift in blood pressure. Well, the same thing happens when the artery to the eye is the smallest artery off of the carotid. And when you get these shifts, you can occlude an artery, you can have an increase in glaucoma long-term, floppy lids and blepharitis and dry eyes, even with a CPAP machine. You can get pseudotumor cerebri from this, where you get a false intraocular pressure and eye pressure and brain pressure because of fluid buildup. And there are just so many nuances, and increased metabolic change, that people become diabetic from sleep apnea. And again, it's correctable by both mechanical means and by losing weight.
Right. And another thing that seems to affect eyes, from what I've heard, is sometimes the overzealous use of blood pressure medication. How can that possibly have an impact?
Well, what happens is glaucoma is a disease of optic nerve. Traditionally, people think it's a number. High number, bad. Low number, good. And the answer is no. The other factors involved are low blood pressure at night. And mm-hmm. if you're overtreated for your blood pressure medication,
Which is common. Which is common. Yeah, but it's common because they just read the numbers and they say, oh, your blood pressure is too high. Well, they don't look at other aspects of your health. They just look at that number on the sphygmomanometer.
That's right. And the fact is they measure you in the morning, sitting on a cold stool, half-dressed, and gauge you by that blood pressure, and don't realize that other times your blood pressure goes much lower. So people should check their own on a regular basis. Especially taking blood pressure medicine, you know, afternoon is not wise, because when you relax, you're going to lower your blood pressure anyway. And lying down adds to that, so that your eye pressure is highest usually between 12 and 2 a.m., but your blood pressure is lowest, and that's when it's flickering out these little nerves.
So you may literally be starving your eyes of their blood supply by not getting up, as it were, an adequate head of steam to bring the blood supply through the tiny arteries going all the way up to the eye.
Exactly right. And that may actually work in the sleep apnea mechanism as well, as blood pressure fluctuates wildly and drops. So you get these changes in these small vessels.
Right.
There's two other mechanisms of action in glaucoma. Mm-hmm. One is neurosensitizers, because in the eye of glaucoma patients, there's twice as much glutamine as there is in the normal eye. And we know that artificial sweeteners are neurotoxins and excitotoxins. Mm.
That's the Russell Blaylock paradigm, who's taught us
exactly right.
Very much about that.
And it is people with dry eyes should stop all artificial sweeteners, use stevia instead. And the fourth mechanism, just found in mice, is lymphatic obstruction. The people who have like chronic lung disease and block their lymphatics and jugular efflux are going to have a much higher rate of glaucoma, because the fluid can't circulate out of the eye and into the veins and into the lymphatics.
Does that mean that you should maybe loosen your collar from time to time and not strive for such a small shirt size?
It certainly means that, and when you get your eye pressure tested, loosen your collar and take three good deep breaths before you get your pressure measured.
Interesting. All right, this is a good inflection point for us to pause, because we separate, as I told you, our podcast into two parts. So let's stipulate this is part one. And when we return, we're going to tackle other common eye problems and provide answers. And you'll find all the answers in a very comprehensive fashion in this encyclopedic book, The Eye Care Revolution, Prevent and Reverse Common Vision Problems. We'll also talk about Dr. Abel's new line of specifically designed nutritional supplements for the eye. When we return in part two of today's podcast, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.